We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Even though I wanted them to have him, I wanted to keep him. I did. Of course I did. Like, he's this perfect little boy who came out and they set him on your chest and you're just like, oh my gosh, like, it's like a puppy, but times 100, you know? You're like, gosh, just want to take you home with me. But I also didn't, you know, but it's just this weird, something that you can't, unless somebody, the only people that have been able to understand are other moms who've given their kids away. Even if you knew that they weren't meant for you, it still leaves a hole.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here as your hosts. We are so excited, as always. We're joined by Carmela Elsass. Did I say that right?
Elsass.
Elsass.
Elsass. Yeah. Hey, I like that.
I bet you were never called Sassy, ever.
You know what? That's my married name. I think it's the best last name ever. I think it's hilarious. And if you say Elsass, my husband will make sure that it is Elsass.
Okay, well, I'm glad you corrected me. I don't want him coming after me.
Right?
I guess you'll probably get into that, but how long has Elsass been your last name?
We got married just about a year ago on June 6th. It'll be a year.
Congratulations.
Awesome. That's thank awesome. You.
Yes. Heck congratulations. Yeah. And, I will say Sassy. Well, obviously your last name's not Sassy, but one of Michaela's favorite words is sassy.
Yeah, I wish that was my last name. That's a good
word.
Yeah.
And now it's one of our six-year-old's favorite words.
Yes.
So,
yep.
Anyway, we are excited. It's been kind of a roller coaster trying to get you on. And you still owe us $20 for having to cancel.
Oh, my God. Or even.
That's true.
Yeah, right?
That is true.
No joke.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So Carmela, we'll just turn it over to you. There was already a little bit of an introduction there, but go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about yourself. And then, I mean, I guess that's all kind of part of your story. So just go ahead and get going on your story and what you have for everybody.
Cool. Well, thank you guys for having me. It has been quite the runaround to get here. It's kind of, and then even tonight, I'm like, oh gosh, is it going to happen? So I'm really excited. I think what's kind of really cool and crazy is just how you guys got in touch with me. One of the things that really stood out to me was when we first talked, you actually didn't know a ton about my story. You had heard just a little bit of my testimony and what God had done for me, but didn't know the other part of a story that so much like falls in line with your guys' story, like different but parallel, which I think is really incredible. And I just think that's a testimony to how God works, mm-hmm. which I think is just so, for me, I see God in so many things now. I didn't really always see that. And one of the things I've been able to really look back on is how God was always there. He was never far away, even though I felt far away from him. He was always there. and continues to be. And it's even through social media, which is this thing that can be so disconnected, it has connected me to some of the really, really so many great people and community, which is such a wild thing because I've never met you guys in person. But we can sit here and have a conversation. I think the video, I'm not sure which one you saw first, but I think I was just talking about how God has worked in my life. And what is kind of crazy is I'm not even sure I told you this when I talked to you on the phone, Brent, how I really came back to God fully. It was a couple years ago, and my life was just falling apart in so many ways. I was going, there was things that happened in my family, things that happened with my kids, and I was just left feeling so, so hopeless and so devastated. And the backstory to that, I was raised in church, actually. I was raised in a church that called themselves Christian. And not to say that nothing they did was good, but it was very fear-based. It was very controlling. And I grew up in a way that I was made to believe that everything was performance-based. You had to perform for God to love you. So as a kid, I grew up saying the same prayer every night, like, "Dear Jesus, if I did anything wrong tonight, please forgive me. So if I die, I go to heaven." That was really the prayer I prayed until, I don't know, it was probably like 16 or 17 years old. And then I just started to get more angry at God, and my family ended up leaving that church. And when we left that church, we lost all of our friends. We were out, like, oust. Nobody would talk to us. People wouldn't shake our hands. Which is such a wild thing because it's really not. I believe that's what makes a cult, is if somebody leaves and you're wrong and you're going to hell. That's kind of not what the Bible teaches. But I, and in my home life was also very tumultuous, very toxic. And that's also the kicker, is from the outside, my family looked like the perfect family. People used to call my parents Barbie and Ken. My mom was very beautiful. My dad was a 6'3" man who was very good looking. And they looked like they had it together. But behind closed doors, it was chaos. It was absolute chaos. My dad had an affair when I was really young, and I was the oldest. I had a younger brother. And I was just thrown into the middle of all of it. My parents told me everything, like the details that actually nobody really should ever know. They were telling me as a 7-year-old. And there was lots of domestic violence. And part of that was the things I saw happen. One time my mom was they were fighting, and she was on the floor. My dad was holding her down, and he punched the floor right next to her head as hard as he could, and he broke his hand. And I was standing 5 feet away from them. And when he broke his hand, after, they told me, "You can't tell anybody how Dad broke his hand." So you had to go to church and pretend like everything was fine while you were living in just this chaos, which, I think even that, being raised in a Christian home, so often people hear, you're raised in a Christian home, you were raised in church, and that automatically means that maybe you grew up in a good home. It doesn't always mean that. And I had to, that all, there's so much more to that story that I don't think is necessarily like the most important part, but I think just knowing the baseline for where it was operating. Love was earned even in our home, not only with God, but from my dad. The silent treatment was always a thing. If you didn't perform well, you didn't do the things well, love was withheld. And when you see your parents be, my mom, she ended up, they stayed married while I was a kid. They didn't get divorced until I was 19. And they had another baby within 2 years of that affair to try to fix things. But the problem is just because you have kids doesn't mean anything gets fixed. It doesn't mean all of that pain and hurt goes away. And so it just got worse, really. My mom, she was insecure. She was always insecure and always seeking validation from men. And they never got over the affair. And then my mom is having emotional affairs with other men and dragging us along behind her. And there was just such a disconnect and no real stability, no real just love, I guess. And so when you don't experience that, it creates a very insecure human, especially when you're forced to grow up so quickly. And in the midst of that, I'd been sexually abused as a kid. And that was ongoing for, years. And the church I was raised in, part of what they kind of preach is that if you are sexually abused as a kid, it's because you were born with a Jezebel spirit. And that spirit and family curse, and you're somewhat, they won't say it directly, but it's implied that you're actually responsible for those things. And so growing up with that, you can imagine the insecurity and the just, you just never ever feel good enough. And you talk about like daddy issues or mommy issues. Those wounds were so deep. And my mom was also, she had a hard life, and I was her only daughter, and I was very much the competition. She couldn't love me like a mom is, I believe, called to love her daughter. I have a daughter now. And for me, it's been so redemptive, because the pains and the hurts that have just hurt so much in me, I've been able to, and it's, I probably sounds selfish, but to be able to redo things and to give my daughter those things that I didn't have has been just one of the greatest blessings that God has ever given me. And I didn't even really realize that until the last couple of years. Like, we are so close, and I was been a single mom to her since she was very little. Her dad is an addict, and that was very hard. But what that relationship has done for me has been just incredible. But I found out I was having a daughter, it was like, oh my gosh, God, why would you give me a girl? Like, I don't even know what to do. Like, I've never ever once in my life called my mom for advice, because she just couldn't, she wasn't there. And I understand that hurt people who don't ever fully heal, they can't show up. They can't, even if it's for your kids, you're incapable. You can't. And one of the things she used to say to me was, if you think you have it bad, you have no idea. It was so much worse for me. And I remember being a kid, and I was always very self-aware. I was always in tuned. And I think it was partly because they treated me like an adult and put me in the middle of their marriage. I remember sitting there thinking, like, well, why wouldn't you want it to be better for us? Like, why don't you want it to be fun? But it wasn't. And the fighting and the screaming and the yelling, it just, that carried on. My dad moved out of my house, or he moved out of our house, I think like 13 times. Would move out for a little while and then come back. And it was just, that was normal life for us. Then you grow up. And before you know it, you're repeating the same cycle. And you get into relationships where you're repeating the same thing. And because you feel so unworthy of love, the first real relationship I got into was very abusive, physically, verbally, mentally, all of the things. I was 19. I was with him for about 2.5 years. And by the end of it, I was wetting the bed every night. Because I lived in so much fear. And would lay over the spot so he wouldn't see it. Because if he saw it, you can use your imagination as to what he would do. And that, honestly, at that point in time, it was a miracle that I was able to get out. I was sitting on a curb outside of the condo I lived in with him, and I was sitting there just so hopeless and literally just thinking about how I could kill myself, because I couldn't do it because I was in physical pain. There were so many things. I was sitting on the curb and my phone rang. And it was a random friend that I hadn't talked to in a long time called me and said, "Hey, I'm worried about you. I just felt this thing and I needed to call you. Are you okay?" And it was such a crazy thing at the time. And this person I hadn't talked to in months, and I started just crying. I hadn't told anybody like the physical part of things. People knew it wasn't good, but they didn't know to the extent. They would see bruises on my arms, and I always had an excuse of why. And makeup, you know, you cover things on your face. And I just told the truth to this person. It's like, just leave. And I was like, well, I can't leave. You know, everything inside you is telling you you're wrong. Like, nobody, and he did. He would tell me over and over again, nobody will ever love you. You're damaged goods. You're broken. Nobody's going to want somebody that these things happen to, because he knew some of the things that happened when I was a kid. And you hear it enough, and that coupled on top of how you're raised, you just start to believe it. You don't believe you're worth anything, and you really don't believe anybody will ever love you. And for whatever reason, that day, my phone rang, and I'm sitting there thinking about how can I kill myself? Really, like, how can I just do it in my sleep? How can I take enough pills, go to sleep and not wake up? And the person on the other end of the phone was like, go inside, pack your stuff right now. He's at work. And I was like, okay, get in the car and drive. Go. And I literally did that. I had a friend that lived in California at the time. She had offered to let me stay with her numerous times over the last year. And I packed my stuff. I got in my car. I wrote him an apology letter and told him how sorry I was for leaving him, and drove to California. That, I think about this often. Your podcast is called Angels Among Us, and the amount of times that somebody showed up just once, just in that moment, what my life wouldn't have been if it wouldn't have been for that one phone call. On that day, that was the perfect time for me to leave. And what's kind of crazy is just recently, I got back in touch with my ex-boyfriend's older sister and finally told her some of the things that happened. And she always knew but didn't know. And to have it come full circle now and to be able to be where I am now, I would be lying if I said I was grateful for that experience. I'm not. That relationship, there's still so many things I still struggle with. And people talk about your body living in fight or flight. You grow up in a home that's like that, and then you get into the relationships like that. And here I am, I'm almost 40 years old, and I still, my husband can't walk into a room without me literally jumping and like just. And we laugh. It's funny, but it's not funny in the other way, that your body just can't relax. But we're getting there. We're making progress. But it's been a lot. But that experience, just those things, set the tone for just so much of my life. And even then, though, like, how God was working. How he was working to lead me to now, and for the things that I've been able to do. I had my daughter a couple, it was like a year and a half later. And her dad, he was persistent and he was nice to me. And after being in a relationship that was so awful, what's kind of funny is I think I was thinking about this the other night, like, where was I at? Like, what was I thinking? What was I doing? And I was so just desperate to be loved. I was so desperate to just fit. I never felt like I fit. I always felt awkward. Kids were pretty mean. I was like quirky. And what's funny is from the outside, again, like people, it's easy for people to look at you and think that you haven't experienced certain things. And we don't ever know anybody's story. We don't ever know what's going on behind closed doors. And I so often remind myself of that and my kids of that. You don't ever know. Her dad, he had been sober for, I think, not even a year when I met him. And he was nice and we were friends and we eventually kind of started dating. And I was pregnant within, I think, like 2 months. And it was just this thing, like, I didn't even know if I really wanted kids. I wanted them, but I didn't feel like I would be a good mom. I think I was so afraid of that. But I was pregnant and everybody told me I shouldn't have a kid, give her up for adoption, have an abortion. You're not in any place to have a kid. I think my dad did tell me to don't have the baby, give her away, or, you know. And it was like this, at the time, it was like this thing that it was almost like, I felt like it was like God giving me, and I wasn't following God. I wasn't saved. But I still had this thing inside me that was like, well, maybe God's giving me a baby because it will love me. And I can love it and maybe it will make the hole inside me go away. And so I had her. Her dad and I were together for a little while before I just knew it wasn't right. It wasn't good, you know. And we were so young. I was 22 when I had her, which I look back and I'm like, I was just a kid who had no idea what she was doing and really probably didn't have any business having a baby. But I will always, she's one of the greatest gifts God's ever given me. But there's been so many moments that I have not felt worthy of being her mom because I didn't feel good enough. I didn't know how to be a mom. I did my very best, but I didn't make all of the best decisions. And her dad, he relapsed within, I don't know, she was about 2 when he relapsed. And that just has been a life of inconsistency for her dad, that he has a good heart. But if you've ever dealt with an addict, it's very hard because you see good in them. You can't make it go away. You can't fix anybody else. You can't do that. And so it's been this kind of whirlwind for her and I, and just always trying to, I had to explain to her when she was very young, like she would ask where her daddy was. Oh, he's sick. Well, why can't he go to the hospital? Well, he's sick in a different way, you know, but trying not to ever demonize him because, you know, the chance that he gets sober and shows up is, you know, is there. And he actually is sober right now and has been for a little while. And she's getting to have a little bit of a relationship with him. And it's really cool to see. But she's learned, you know, she's learned some really hard lessons at a very young age. unfortunately. And it's been her and I did get remarried a couple years after to somebody again that wasn't very nice to her and wasn't very nice to me. But even in that, God has used him and everything we lived through there. I had another baby with him, and he's my son. He's 9 years old, and he's special needs. And he also has been one of the greatest gifts and humbled me in such a way. I did not think I was going to cry this much. I'm sorry. Has humbled me in a way that I didn't even... When I found out I was pregnant with him, I worked at a preschool with special needs kids. And I had said to one of the teachers I worked with, I don't know how these parents do it. I could never do this. And it was like, God was like, okay, Carmela, here we go. I'm going to show you what else you can do. And my little boy was born. We didn't know anything was wrong. And then as time went on, he didn't do the things he was supposed to do. And ended up finding out he has something called cerebellar hypoplasia. So part of his brain didn't develop like it was supposed to. They told me that he would probably never walk, never talk, that he probably would never eat solid food. He does do those things. He doesn't do them like everybody else, but he does them, and he brings so much joy, and he loves so well. And he's, part of his diagnosis is his life expectancy is much, much shorter than a normal person's. And so it just teaches you to just relish every day that you have with them and to just laugh a little bit more and let things go like you maybe wouldn't, because you just don't ever know. He has these they're like seizures, migraines, like they just debilitate him often, and he'll sleep for like 14 hours. And every time he has those, you just, you don't know if he's going to wake up. And that is a really hard thing to just swallow as a mom. But also, just God has used him for Juliet and I, my daughter. He's such a blessing. But it also is, you know, it's so humbling. It is. You don't ever think it's going to be you. You don't think that. You look at other people and you're like, gosh, what amazing parents. Like, that's not going to happen to me. And then it does. And honestly, Ransler ended up being such a blessing because he is developmentally delayed. I had another baby almost 7 years ago. And this is where our connection gets crazy, because you guys didn't know this when you reached out to me. But I had another baby. I was a egg donor / surrogate for another family. For a client, I do hair for a living. And I had done her hair for about 3 years. And in that 3 years, gotten to know her, gotten to like hear her story. And they were trying to have a baby. And in that time period of getting to know her, I had gotten pregnant with Ransler, actually, which is such a hard thing when you're doing somebody's hair who can't have a baby, who's lost babies. You feel guilty. I felt awful telling her I was pregnant. And she was happy for me. She was joyous for us, and which was really, really cool. And I had had Ransler. It was probably, Ransler was about a year old, year and a half. And she started telling me that they were going to look for an egg donor. And I was doing her hair. She tells me this. And I just was standing there and I was like, well, I'll donate my eggs to you guys. And she was like, what? And I was like, yeah, no, it's not a big deal. I mean, if I can, why not? And so we started the process. I went and did the test to see if I'd be a good candidate for that. And it turns out I had 3 times the amount of eggs somebody my age should have. And so they're like, you're a perfect candidate. And the plan was for her to hopefully carry the baby. And they ended up telling her, it's just her body and her history. She had had, I don't know how many miscarriages, a lot. I want to, if I can recall correctly, I think it was like 11 or 12 miscarriages. And so they told her that it would be best if they found a surrogate. So she comes to her next hair appointment and she's like, so you're a great candidate, but we're going to look for a surrogate and hopefully use your eggs and hopefully we'll find somebody. And again, I was like, well, and it really was this fast. It was, it's like, well, I'll just do it. Like, that just sounds easier. Then we don't have to take anything out of me and I don't have to do anything. Like, what if we just, I'll just do it. She was like, well, are you serious? And I was like, yeah, I'm serious. Yeah, sure. And so I went home and I told my ex-husband, I think I'm going to have a baby for Bill and Becky. And he was like, well, are you sure? And he was hesitant and he wasn't thrilled about it, which I could see why. It's a lot. It's a big undertaking. But I couldn't, my mind was not going to be swayed. I made up my mind. I told them I would do it. And it was a handshake deal. We didn't have any financial papers. We didn't, like, or not financial papers, adoption papers, like nothing. There was nothing financial. Like, it was just, it was a handshake. It was them putting all of their faith in me and me putting all of my faith in them. And when it came time, you know, they asked, like, well, do you want to go to a facility? Do you want to do the whole process? And I said, well, I'd rather have nobody involved. I'd rather just, that sounds awful, the whole clinical part, all of it. Like, and so she made a couple of deliveries to my front door. And I inseminated myself. I did it 1 month and didn't get pregnant the first month. And again, this was me not following God like I should have been, but having a conversation with God and telling him, hey, man, if this is supposed to happen, you got to make this happen quick because this is not very fun. I don't really want to do this for a long time. And I got pregnant the second month, which is actually insane. I didn't realize it was that insane until I went to the doctor for my prenatal first checkup. And it was the same doctor that delivered my other 2 kids. And I told him, so this is the deal. And he looked at me and he said, Carmela, you understand that people don't get pregnant this way. And I was like, well, I did. And he said, if people do, it takes at least a year. It is like, it is not something that happens normally. And for me, it happened in 2 months, which I still am just blown away by. And so we went through the pregnancy. Everything was as it should be. Everything went perfectly. As the pregnancy went on, though, there was definitely things that I was not prepared for. As much as I like to think I'm not a super emotional person, I'm very emotional. And I didn't realize how hard it was going to be. Nothing could have prepared me for what I was going to feel. And at the time, I had my 2 stepsons that I raised, and we had them full time. So I had 4 kids with me, and I would go walk, and I was super pregnant. And people would always comment like, oh my gosh, you're having another one. And I would say, well, this one I'm having for another family. And people had made comments to me that like, you know that that baby's going to look for you. You know that you're going to like, and it would mess with my mind so much. Like, am I doing the wrong thing? Like, is this, you just, it is, it's, and it was such a weird thing because I look at it now and I'm having a baby that is biologically connected to you. Whether you're making them for somebody else or not, you still go through the process and you feel everything. And I love my kids. I love my kids more than anything. And I always wanted more kids. And my ex-husband did not want more kids. That was not in the cards. We absolutely weren't having any more, especially after we had our son and he was the way he was. Baby came 3 weeks early. I worked the entire time. I had worked until like 11:30 the night before. And went into labor the next morning. Got to the hospital. We got to the hospital at 10:23. He was born at 10:28.
Oh my gosh.
I was walking into the hospital and just like holding my belly. She was like, went to check me and she was like, oh my gosh, he's like, there was no IV. There was no anything. It was, he was coming out and he came out so fast. And what's crazy about my kids, all three of them weigh exactly the same. So he was born 3 weeks early. They all three weighed 6 pounds, 7 ounces. And he came out and he was perfect. And they put him on my chest. And, you know, the whole world falls in on you. Because you just did this thing. Especially for him to just be born, that he just came in like a, just in the craziest way. And they put him on your chest. And I didn't even have time to call his parents. I called his parents after he was born, like, hey guys, guess what? Your baby's here.
Oh my gosh.
And so they got there and, you know, I held him for a little while. And then they, you know, they take him away. And because he was born so fast and because I didn't have any, anything like, any complications or anything, they gave me the option to go home. So he was born at 10:28 and they tell me at about 1, like, if you want to go home today, you can. I didn't necessarily want to go home, but my ex-husband wanted to go home. I was like, well, we can go home. The kids are waiting. Like, we can get the kids tonight and just go home. And so we left. And so it was like, go in, have a baby. Thank you for your service. On your way. And so we went home. And what nobody prepares you for is you have the baby, but when you give a baby away or you have a stillborn or you have a body that still had a baby. And it's like your body mourns. It just is. And I knew there was no part of me. I was happy. I was happy that they got their baby. I was I'm still so happy. I just wasn't prepared for what I would go through, for the pain that you go into and what your mind goes through. And this questioning of, did I do the right thing? Is this... And then also going back to, like, if it wasn't supposed to be, it wouldn't have happened and God wouldn't have just played it all out the way he did. And this is where my son, who has special needs, he was still just like a baby. And I had I had 100% postpartum depression and just, I've always had anxiety, but it was just like amped up. I couldn't let him sleep in his own room. I brought him back to my room And which, sure, there's people that would say that was not the best thing to do, but at the time it was the only thing I could do, was just love my kids. And when you experience a loss like that, even though it's for like everybody's benefit and it's such a blessing, it still is a loss. And you still have to mourn and you still have to grieve. And what I would try to do, like I tried to go back to work 4 days after he was born, which was insane. Mm-hmm. And I went and was in so much pain because I'd gotten mastitis. And I couldn't even think straight. I've never been a person that really lets myself feel anything. It's just survival mode. You just keep going because nobody's coming to save you. So you just keep doing what you're doing, especially if you're in a situation that there's not a ton of support or understanding. It's a lot. And it was a lot to go through, and it left this thing. I think it, like, the hole inside me as I just got older and experienced more things just got bigger. And that left me in this place of searching for something to fill it, searching for the thing that was going to make me feel better. And I went into this, gosh, such a spiral of just not a good space. I tried ayahuasca. I went on an ayahuasca journey and thought it helped. No, it didn't. I shaved my head 6 months after he was born. And at the time I was like, oh, I'm feeling empowered. And now I look back and I'm like, I was absolutely reeling. I was just in this space of trying to move forward, trying to do all the things, but not fully letting myself feel it, not letting myself really just grieve so I could move forward. And it took a long time to do that. I actually saw him a week ago, and he's beautiful. He's almost 7. And he knows that he has 2 moms. He knows that he came from me. And he is, I mean, his parents, his mom, I saw her, well, maybe it was 2 weeks ago. It was right before Mother's Day. It was a day before. But she just is, when I saw her, you know, she just tells me what a gift he is. And he changed their life. And I see him now. And it, what's so cool is because we did it the way we did it, and because we both followed through. I mean, we weren't prepared because he came so early. But we signed adoption papers, and everything went as beautifully as it could ever go. And he has a beautiful life. He's so loved. And what is so funny is, so when I was pregnant with him, my little boy would always lay his head on my belly and he would always kick him. It was like he always knew when Ransler's head was on my belly, and he would thump him. And Ransler would stick his head up and look at me because he could feel him. And when they get together in the same room, it's like they know each other. It is the most wild thing ever, but they get along so well. And it's just like just such a crazy, crazy thing that we actually all, he was born in 2019 too. So had we waited a little bit longer, we would have just had such an awful experience had it been 2020. And so it was all just like divine timing, even then, even before God was working my life like he was working. And there's no way that I would have had the strength to if it wasn't for God. Like, then it's what's wild is, like, in those moments of feeling so hopeless, even in the hospital. I mean, I cried harder than I've ever cried. Because you would just, even though I wanted them to have him, I wanted to keep him. I did. Of course I did. Like, he's this perfect little boy who came out and they set him on your chest and you're just like, oh my gosh, like, it's like a puppy, but times 100, you know, you're like, gosh, I just want to take you home with me. But I also didn't, you know, but there's just this weird something that you can't, unless somebody, the only people that have been able to understand are other moms who've given their kids away. Even if you knew that they weren't meant for you, it still leaves a hole. But to be able to see him and to see the blessing he is for them is just, and I watch your guys' videos and like your kids, what they are to you. And I always say God has such a sense of humor because your kids look like you. And it's like he knew that. And what's so funny about the little boy I had is he looks so much like me, but he looks like his mom too. We have the same skin tone. And so he's like this olive skin and you would never know that that's not her biological son. And it's the coolest thing. And I just think that part of how God works is so incredible and so just miraculous. I don't think there's another word for it. And what was crazy is after he was born, my son and him went to the same preschool, and it was before he knew who I was. So we would walk past each other on the playground.
Oh my gosh.
In the morning. And that was still like, I was so much having to process just like, there's a little boy that I had, like, and him not knowing who I was. And that was a wild thing that, nobody prepares you for. They don't. But I think what is beautiful is how God just does work. And so this part, so kind of goes back to the beginning a couple years ago when my life blew up after I had Walker. My ex-husband and I were, like I said, we did not have a very good, it wasn't good. And there were some things that happened with my kids and things that just literally, like, as a mom, blew up my entire life and made me feel like I was the worst mom in the world. You always want to protect your kids from everything and you can't. No matter how hard you try and you try to do everything right, and sometimes you get it wrong. And I was left in this place. It was like a year and a half after I had a little baby. And then everything just blew up. And I was back in that space of feeling like I didn't want to be here because I had let them down because things had happened. And just laying literally on my closet floor, just saying, like, God, why? Why did you let these things happen? Why am I their mom? And God found me. He just did. He found me there in those moments. And I started listening to worship music and I started asking my ex-husband, like, please go to church with me, begging and asking. And my ex-husband was a Satanist. He did not want to go to church with me. And I was trying so hard. And I was so afraid to leave. And I was seeing a therapist, a trauma therapist, for some of the things that had happened. And she was working with me through some things. And she asked me, like, why are you staying? It's like, I'm so afraid of leaving my son. I was going to have to split custody. So afraid of leaving him alone because he couldn't tell me everything. He still can't. He can't. His sense of reality is so different than yours or mine. And she told me, you know, she said, what is, like, so what if you stay, what version of you do your kids get? Do they get to see you live? Do they get to see you happy? Do they get to experience joy with you? And she said, like, she said, Carmela, the opposite of depression is expression. You're never going to, because we lived on eggshells. There was no laughing. There was no dancing in the kitchen. There was no game nights were crazy, like just screaming and yelling and just, they were so bad. There was so much that was not good. And it was between seeing her and just crying out to God over and over again, like, give me strength. Like, what do I do? And then also growing up with this, like, thing in the back of your head, like, nagging, you're not supposed to get divorced, right? That's, God hates divorce. But I do think the Bible also says if you're married to somebody with hard heart, that it's okay. God doesn't want you to suffer. But I had to, it was like I needed God to show me that. And he did. And he gave me the strength to get out and to trust him, to trust that my son was going to be safe and that he's going to be okay. And it's still, honestly, one of the hardest things. It is one of the hardest things. Divorce is, it is not fun. I think it can be a blessing, but it doesn't mean it's fun. It doesn't mean it's easy. But we moved into a little house and we laughed. And it was the first house that I ever felt safe in, that we breathed in, that my daughter just got to just be a kid, even though she was already, you know, older. And just how God has moved in the last few years has just been crazy. I didn't share this with you when I talked to you on the phone, but I did an IVF surrogacy. I got pregnant January 13th of 2025. And I was struggling. I was already dating my husband, but we weren't married. And I, being a single mom, and I did get very, for lack of a better word, screwed in my divorce. And I was struggling to make things, like, financially work. And so I was sitting there, like, I couldn't work more than I was possibly working. And I never was going to compromise my dignity. There's other ways to make money. So it was like, what can I do? It's not going to take time from my kids and can still be a blessing for somebody else. And so I started working with a surrogacy agency. And again, it was like, the thing this time was, IVF is no joke, and the hormones. And did you guys ever do IVF?
We didn't get through that process yet because of COVID. That's a part of our miracle story.
Yes, because it's awful. Women that go through IVF, like, my heart just is, I feel for them because it is so much. It is so much on your mental state and your body. But I did it. And I got pregnant the first embryo transfer. Everything was going great. And I got to about 15 weeks pregnant. And I got something called a subchorionic hemorrhage. And so everything was perfect. And I was making hamburgers. And I walked into the bathroom to use the bathroom and started dumping blood all over my bathroom floor. And thank God my husband was here. And I called him in and he rushed me to the hospital. We go to the hospital, they do an ultrasound, and the baby was okay. I was dumping blood and the ultrasound technician's like, there's something like blocking my view. And she's like, maybe just use the restroom. And I started delivering blood clots the size of softballs just coming out of me. And the baby was still okay. And the doctor told me, we don't know exactly what causes this, but, you know, the chances of miscarriage are very high. And so they sent me home and had me go see my doctor a couple days later. And the bleeding had kind of stopped a little bit. I went to the doctor 3 days later and she does an ultrasound and she was like, oh my gosh, your uterus, which I always stay pretty small when I'm pregnant. So I was almost halfway through the pregnancy, but I was still very small. But it was overnight. I went from not looking pregnant to looking like I was 4 months, 5 months pregnant. My uterus was completely full of blood. And she said, wherever you need to get wherever you're going and you need to stay there. Well, of course, who I am, I'm like, okay. I take my daughter to breakfast. Like, we'll be fine. And we get in the car. And where my doctor was about an hour and a half away from our house. We start driving down the road and I start hemorrhaging in the car. Just bleeding all over my car. My daughter's like, Mom, you need to pull over. So we pulled into a gas station. And I was like, well, I'll just change my pants. It's okay. And I go to get out of the car and made it about 3 feet before I just completely passed out, collapsed. My daughter was there and she watched all of this, called 911. And she sat with me in the hospital for 4 days. Would not leave while I pushed out blood clots the size of volleyballs over the next 4 days and had 4 blood transfusions. Fell to critical condition. And that will take your whole life and just funnel it down into what? I never wrote a will. I never thought about it. And I had to sit there and ask my daughter, where do you want to go? Because I don't know if I go home. I couldn't lift my arms. I literally looked like people that came to see me, they told me, like, we didn't think we were going to see you again. And sitting there and pleading with God, just let me stay. It was the first time I'd ever prayed that prayer because for so long I didn't want to be here. I didn't feel good enough. And it was finally like, I had this man who followed Jesus, who is now my husband, who sat with me and my daughter and just saying, like, God, whatever it is that you want me to do, I'll do it. And you hear other people say that and you're like, does God really listen? And I prayed that prayer for days. And the doctor finally came in. They told me I needed to abort the baby. And I couldn't do it. I told him no. And he said, well, you're probably not going to make it if you don't. And I said, well, that's not my call to make. And any woman in this situation, I have zero judgment on whatever they decide. For me, it was just not something I could do. It was not a call I could make. And I knew that there were going to be people angry at me because it potentially meant that I wouldn't be here. Miraculously, the bleeding had stopped enough to where the doctor said, okay, like, I'll give you more time. And it stopped for a little bit. Enough. And he said, I'm going to send you home. You're still, as soon as you start bleeding, you have to come right back. So we were in the hospital for about 4 days. We went home. I couldn't walk. I couldn't drive. I was so weak. I had no blood in me. The blood transfusions were barely bringing me up over the level that you need to keep you alive. But the thing with blood transfusions is they won't do so many of them because they come with side effects and they come with things that happen with them. And so I went home and made it 2 days. By this point, I was about, I think it was 17 and a half weeks pregnant. Made it 2 days and went to sleep. Was trying to sleep and my belly just got like rock hard. And it was the weirdest thing. And my husband had come to stay and I was like, babe, like my belly. And he's like, it feels like there's a rock in there. Like, well, I don't know what's happening. And I got through that night. Next day, stayed home and got up to use the restroom and started hemorrhaging again. And my daughter had to call 911 again. And they took me, I went into full labor in the ambulance and got to the hospital. And the same thing was happening. I started those blood clots, and they were literally this big, were coming out of me. And the doctor was, he thought I was serious, like I was in so much pain, and I was covered up by a sheet, and he was like, well, you know, we'll see. And I lifted the sheet up and I told him, like, I know it's not okay. And he was like, my God, no, we need to do ultrasound right now. And so the lady came to get me for the ultrasound and realized I couldn't move. There was no way I couldn't walk. And went to get the ultrasound machine. And as she walked away, I delivered the baby. And he was already gone. And I started hemorrhaging again. And so my blood levels fell. And fell and fell. And the nurse that was sitting next to me, I felt myself going away. And I knew if I closed my eyes enough that I wasn't going to wake up. And she kept squeezing my hand. She just kept saying, don't go anywhere. Stay right here. Stay right here. And I was all by myself in the hospital. My husband hadn't gotten there yet. And I didn't have my phone until right. The lady who picked up my kids had dropped my phone off right as this was happening. And it was that same thing. I just told God, like, whatever, please don't take me. Please let me see my kids again. Please let me marry this man. And when you deliver a baby who's not alive, and you see them, it is not something I would wish on anybody ever. And they did another 2 blood transfusions. Thank God, in enough time. And my husband got there. It stayed with me. And I lived. And I'm here. And everything I do, everything that I've done, the only reason you found me on social media is because of that story. Because, and really, if it wasn't for my husband, when I think about angels, my husband is, when he came into our life, I'd given up. I told God, like, I don't want to date. I don't want anything to do with anybody. And if there is a man that's supposed to be here, you're going to have to bring him. And I wrote down a list of all the things that I wanted. Which sounds silly, but it was so important to me that I found somebody who loved Jesus and that could lead and that could love us. Because when you've lived a life to where you were annoying and you were never enough and you had people point out every single thing that was wrong with you, you're left feeling pretty awful. And my husband came and honestly, it was really hard for me to let him love me because he did it really well and I wasn't used to it. And so he was persistent and... And if it hadn't been, and I've told him this, like, I would love to say that just my kids would have been enough, but I never felt worthy of really being their mom because I just didn't feel good enough. And my husband coming into our life, he just has built me up and loves me in a way that in such a godlike way that I don't think I would have had the confidence to ask God to let me let me stay if it wasn't for my husband and laying there in the hospital bed pleading for my life because I wanted the chance to live. I wanted the chance to be able to experience something that I've never experienced before. And I did. And we got married. He officially proposed 2 weeks after that. And we got married really fast because I was like, I don't want to wait. What he's been for my kids and for my daughter has been just like the most incredible, incredible thing ever. He is for us. I mean, we have a home that is joyous and we laugh and we joke and we go through really hard things. We're a blended family in that. That's a lot. There's things that you're not prepared for, but when you have somebody and you put God at the head of things, it really does make all of the difference. And I can say that 100% because I've done it both ways. And doing what I have started doing on social media, which has just been, if I'm being honest, the most wild thing, because when I really started posting on social media again, which I had done years before, I was kind of making videos and I was scared. And I just felt God say, like, what are you going to do with it? You asked me to stay. What are you going to do with it? And finally just said, okay, God, like, whatever it is, like, and started sharing, and it just keeps growing. And like how God has moved in that space, none of where we are or who I am now is without him. And just without, like, my life is a miracle. It is. And the people that have, in so many ways, just come in at the right times. And then the blessings that I've been able to see the little boy that I gave away a couple weeks ago, and to see the joy that he brings, and then the joy my son brings, and my daughter and my husband, and to see how God just really works and moves. There's nothing like it. There's nothing. People, when you post on social media and you share things about God, people do mock you and they say awful things sometimes. And people will often say, like, where's your proof? I've had that comment. Where's your proof? Show me proof that God's real. And it's so hard because how do you explain all of what I just explained in a comment? But I know he's real because I'm still here. I know he's real because I feel joy. And I was absent of joy for so long because that hole inside of me that really was just gaping, just like wanted to be loved so badly, isn't there like it was. And it's not there, but I still, like, my husband is so amazing because he, because in, like, if I'm telling the truth, like, I struggle so much still to, I'm afraid that I'm still very much like working through that fear and that just like reassurance that God gives us, but I'm still human. And so that means I need my husband to tell me I love you a lot. And he does that for me, and he does it so well. And it's such a, like, just such a blessing, and to watch. Really, I think for me, like, such a big testimony, like, part of my testimony is my kids, because my kids have lived through really hard things. And to see them flourish and be confident and be happy. I say often, like, for the things that my daughter's lived through, she's 15. She has every excuse in the book to be the girl who is drinking and just to do all of the things that kids do when they've been hurt or they've had a hard life. And that kid is so confident, and she is happy, and she believes in Jesus and is just such an inspiration to me. And I often, like, go back to being pregnant with her and, God, why did you give me a girl? And she is such an angel for me, because she has healed so much of, he has healed so much of me through her. And it's pretty incredible, actually, when I say it all out loud and really just where things are going, even on social media, talking with people like you guys, what you guys are doing. There is this, like, I really do feel like there's this Jesus, like, Jesus movement that's so beautiful and so cool. That's not religion. It's real. It's just like a super spiritual God moving, which I think is just incredible.
I just want to tell you that I love you. Like, I love you so much, and I don't even know you.
Because I love you.
I see you through a totally different lens, and I couldn't say this 6.5 years ago because of our daughter's biological mother, and she's gone through so much of the similar things that you have gone through. And I told her this, and I'm telling you this, like, it's not your fault that you had to go through all the things that you went through as a child. And then as you developed, right? Like, it's our caregivers, you know, like, they should take care of us and love us, you know, at some extent. And we also can't blame them for the things that they went through, you know, like, if we could only look at people through the lens of how Jesus does, like, I think that we could save a lot more people and understand a lot more people and the way and the reason why they work. But you have broke that chain, and your daughter is so happy because you're happy, you know? And that's all that kids want, is just that peace and that happiness and that joy that you have now. And you deserve this. And
thank you.
I'm just so happy for you. And I know that it's still a journey, and I know that it's still probably hard at times, but, like, you know, I love to, and you might not believe this, but I do. I believe that there is a heavenly mother, and I see so much of you in her, or the other way around, right? Like, because deep down in your core, forget about all the trauma and all of the pain that you've gone through. Like, you are diligent. You are loving. You have a light about you. You love hard. And I can see that in you. So thank you for sharing your story. I know Brent has a lot he wants to probably say. So
not a lot, because Carmela did all of the teaching today.
She did.
And we're so thankful. You did mention about proof, people asking for proof. Tell them to go listen to this story. And I know that there is a God, because like Michaela said, I can see him in you. And the way that she said this also, but just the light about you. And you can look at people, and I believe that I can see Jesus in everybody. I believe that we are all born with that light inside of us. Some people just haven't found that light yet, and they don't know how to let that light shine. But you have figured out how to let that light shine so bright. And it is incredible to see. You are beautiful, but you're even more beautiful than you ever could have been, because your light is shining so bright. And it's his light. That's what it is. And it's shining through you, and it's incredible. And I had thoughts and stuff that I wanted to say about different things, but there's not much that I need to say other than thank you. I, as adoptive parents, we think about our birth mothers often, and for us, they are our angels, and in our eyes, they are perfect. And I know that the parents of your birth son feel the same way about you. And he doesn't have to look for you, because you guys have done it the right way, and he knows you, and he knows that he has two mommies. And it's beautiful. Your story is, it has everything, and it's beautiful. And I'm so grateful that you've come and shared it with us. And go ahead. I'm sorry. Did you have something?
No, I was just going to say thank you.
You're welcome. We can't let you go until you share one thing that you know to be true, though.
The one thing I know to be true is that God is a God of redemption and restoration, that he's real, that he can take the most broken hearted and the most broken people, and he can make them whole again. I know that to be true because he did it for me. And I'm so grateful. And to be able to, oh my gosh, I'm a mess. Share it with other people. What God does is such a gift. And I think the thing that I just want so many women and men to know is that there's nothing that you've done. There's nothing that's happened to you. You're not damaged goods. You're not broken beyond repair. And if you hear that, it's such a lie. God loves you and sees you, and he wants, I think that's the thing we often forget, is he wants to restore us. He wants to redeem us because he loves us so much.
You are so beautiful.
Thank you.
This. Can't wait to share it.
Yes. If you're listening to this, and if anybody has ever told you, or if you have ever felt that you are damaged goods, or you're not good enough, or any of those other terrible things that people are so good at making other people feel, but I'm telling you, that does not come from God. That comes from the adversary, and he's very good at doing what he does. So recognize that and find out what it is that God wants you to know and wants you to hear. And on that note, go look for those angels.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.